Welcome to the Straight Talk Physio Podcast with your hosts, Dr. Andrew Junak and Dr. Craig Giambattista. On today's episode, we're going to talk about how to thaw a frozen shoulder and what physical therapists do to manage adhesive capsulitis. This is a really fun topic. It's actually probably not what most people would expect, especially when they're used to kind of the typical type of physical therapy management. This diagnosis in particular is managed very differently. So Craig, why don't you kick this off and tell us a little bit about what a frozen shoulder or adhesive capsulitis actually is, and kind of give us your rundown on some of the experience you've had treating this.
With this one, the descriptor for what it is actually kind of in the name. And one thing that I find really like surprising for patients when I describe this is like what the joint capsule is. So adhesive, just kind of meaning stuck, capsulitis, capsule meaning the joint capsule, itis meaning some type of like irritation or inflammation. So if we just kind of break that word down, it kind of tells us what's going on. So a lot of times when people see the shoulder, it's typically like, or what I use in the clinic is it's like typically a bone model. Sometimes it's got the, rotator cuff muscles on there, but it basically just looks like the ball in a socket, which essentially is what the shoulder is. But what people don't realize or what we don't show them very often is most of our moving joints are covered by something called the joint capsule. I typically describe it as kind of like, just think of a big ball of ligaments that goes around that ball and socket and it keeps everything in there. The joint has some fluid in it as well to help it move a little smoother. And that's kind of the reason why we have this joint capsule or like this covering of the joint. I mean, we could spend a lot of time going into the advanced anatomy, but for our purposes here, let's just think of this, you know, this covering that we'll call the joint capsule. So basically what we think happens with this frozen shoulder is the capsule itself tightens up. So when you go to move your arm, your range of motion is restricted. And typically with the frozen shoulder, it's going to be limited in many ranges, you know, so it's not like just going to be stiff lifting your arm up. It's going to be stiff, like reaching up your back or reaching out to the side. You'll tend to notice that multiple planes of motion tend to be limited. And it's typically limited actively. So if I asked you to raise your arm, it would be limited you going up, but it would also be limited passively. So if you were in, you know, complete relaxed mode and I took your arm and tried to move it for you, it would be stiff too. And those are some of the things we use to identify it, and describe it. Another thing I see too, which is pretty common, well, depending on what phase you're in, is your shoulder muscles are relatively strong. I'll use the term relatively here, but you know, we don't see like this profound weakness all the time with the frozen shoulder. So sometimes that can be a little confusing to patients as well. They'll say, I can still lift things, I can still grip things, and it doesn't hurt, but it feels kind of like I'm stuck. Is that stuff you see as well, Drew? Are there any other things that you like to use to, you know, help your patients understand this stuff a little better?
Yeah, I think when it comes to the capsule, I think you described it really, really well. I think sometimes people have a hard time conceptualizing what the capsule is surrounding a joint. And you did a great job of talking about the many different ligaments that kind of keep it together. I'd say some of the other things that, you know, come along with frozen shoulder or adhesive capsulitis are the type of pain that people experience is kind of unique. Usually it's kind of this like dull, deep ache. And the ache can be constant depending on what phase that the patient is in. And we'll kind of lead right into the different phases of frozen shoulder with that is we have phase one, which is considered like the freezing phase. So this is where the shoulder is very achy. It's very irritable. So it doesn't take much to leave someone with what we call lingering pain. So we have different types of pain. So we have pain that lingers and pain that doesn't. Pain that lingers is you move your arm a certain way, the pain increases, but then it remains afterwards. So it stays aggravated versus pain that doesn't linger. You might move into a certain motion. You might feel some discomfort, but when you get out of it, the pain immediately goes away and resolves. So when we're in this freezing phase, which is the very beginning phases of a frozen shoulder, it is highly irritable. We have to actually be somewhat protective of the shoulder because if we do too much, it will actually freeze faster and faster and faster. Phase two of a frozen shoulder is the frozen phase. So this is actually where the shoulder is just super stiff. So it doesn't actually have to be super painful here. It might just be painful when you reach or when you get into one of those positions. So I would say in the frozen phase, there's less lingering. Doesn't mean there still can't be some, but patients often notice a substantial difference between the freezing phase and the frozen phase. And as a clinician, we definitely can tell the difference because the patient is describing their pain levels differently. Their limitations are a little bit less in the frozen phase because we can actually start to move them and be a little bit more aggressive with some of the things that we do from a stretching perspective, from a manual therapy perspective as well. And then lastly, we have what's called the thawing phase. So this is where the shoulder itself is actually starting to slowly get better. So you're going to start to see improvements in your range of motion, improvements in your pain levels. You'll be able to sleep throughout the night, probably in this phase. I would say in the freezing phase, a lot of times people are awake or having trouble sleeping throughout the night. In the frozen phase, in the beginning of the frozen phase, you'll start to see you'll sleep a little bit better. Towards the end of the frozen phase or in the middle of the frozen phase, usually you can sleep just fine. So sleep is another thing that's highly impacted by this, along with just doing your regular activities of daily lifting, like dressing, washing your hair, reaching overhead, reaching behind your back, tucking in your shirt, those sorts of things. Craig, do you have anything to add to those three phases? Or, I mean, what do you see clinically? Is it pretty similar to that? Or is there other things that you've seen? I know you've probably seen a lot more frozen shoulders than me just because of the difference in our patient populations.
So I would say, at least from just having a little more clinical experience in it, is we as physical therapists, we often see people in the initial freezing stage because, like you said, it's so irritable. So, like, of course, you're going to want to seek help if your shoulder hurts. And I think that, having the talk of how long the stuff lasts is going to be super important, which we'll touch on in a second here. And I think one of our main jobs during the freezing stage is to kind of manage that irritability along with exercise, which you kind of touched on there. So I would just say in that initial phase, the education portion is just so important. And I would, if we want to use the term like inflammatory and not inflammatory, we could say that the inflammatory phase is happening when freezing, but it becomes much less prominent in the other phases.
Absolutely. So Craig, why does it happen?
Yeah. So, I mean, like, that's the number one question we always get.
$1 million question, right?
Stuff going on, and it's like, and this is one of those cases where we just have to give like the crappy medical answer. Like, we just don't know. We don't know for sure, which is like kind of crazy, because like it's well studied. We see it a lot. Like, we have like this great timetable on how it lasts even, but we still like don't have this like, we can't really hammer down exactly what's going on. Like, we could have like this big histological debate of like what's happening at a cellular level to the capsule. Some people will argue it's a specific ligament of the capsule. Some people say it's not even the capsule at all, so I think we really go back and forth with it. But what, as the patient, like, what does that mean to you? So you can get, whoever is telling you have this frozen shoulder might give you like a pretty good opinion on it. And as long as it makes sense to you and that the treatment plan makes sense and is in line with your beliefs, then I'm pretty much okay with it, but I guess the second thing there is like being cautious if someone is going to try to sell you a quick fix on it and saying like, this is exactly why it happened, this is exactly what we're going to do to get you this fast result. I don't really think that's appropriate. But it's just another one of those medical things where we have to kind of say like, we know how it acts, we know how to fix it, but we're not 100% sure exactly why it happens. But with that being said, we do have like some common characteristics that we see, like when we study people with frozen shoulder, there's some commonalities that we find. So Drew, what are some common things that you tend to see in the clinic or some things that you read about, or what's the characteristic of people with a frozen shoulder?
So it's really interesting because there kind of is a profile for it. And we see certain types of profiles. Like, we know, for example, disc herniations are more prevalent between the ages of like 20 years old and 40 years old. We know spinal stenosis is a little bit more prevalent age 60, age 65 and up. So a lot of times with age, we can develop some sort of a profile as to what might be going on before we even, not necessarily before we see the patient, but it plays a role into the total picture and diagnosis. And some of the things that come into play here is you'll see there's a whole lot of things that we've been able to correlate with this. So one is diabetics are more likely to experience a frozen shoulder. Also, women over the age of 50 are about four times more common, or this diagnosis is about four times more common in women over the age of 50 years old, which is also really interesting. And again, a lot of these things we don't know for sure as to why. There's speculation due to, you know, different types of cellular changes and stuff like that. But we don't have the greatest answers right now. Other systemic diseases play a role, thyroid disorder, Parkinson's, cardiac disease. If you think about some of these other systemic diseases and diabetes, they affect a lot of different things and different body systems. So again, when someone is dealing with systemic changes like that, it's really hard to pinpoint like what part of it is probably causing the issue. Also a period of immobilization or surgery. So people who might've just had a shoulder scope might be a little bit more prone to this, or if they had a really big rotator cuff repair. What can happen is if they're stuck in a sling for a really long period of time and they're afraid to get out of the sling, that period of immobilization can often lead to a stiffening up of that joint capsule and just the trauma from the surgery in and of itself. Also, the non-dominant arm seems to be affected more frequently than the dominant arm. This is another one of those things, like we see it clinically, but we don't have a great understanding of why. And then also, it tends to happen bilaterally. So if you've seen it in, if you've had it in one arm, the likelihood that you'll have it in another isn't out of the question. So Craig, do you have anything to add to some of the characteristics? Again, I know you see this a lot more than I do.
I would just kind of highlight the importance of what you mentioned with the systemic disease stuff. So like being a diabetic puts you at a much more increased risk for this condition. And then you mentioned some other things, you know, thyroid disorder, cardiac disease. And I think it's really important for how you highlighted that it's like the whole body system, you know? So we might be thinking it's something maybe outside of locally just the shoulder. Why is it just the shoulder that's affected compared to all these other joints? Like you said, we don't really know, but it is important to think that there might be this whole body thing going on that we don't really have like this great grasp on. So I think I find that like super interesting. Like, why does something that potentially could be so systemic like present so locally in just one joint? Crazy to me, but it's just, you know, it's just so common. But with that being said, so we know like the common characteristics, we don't really know why it happens. How long, so you mentioned the phases before, and you see, let's say a patient comes in, they're in the freezing phase. Like, how long are people in these phases? And maybe we could talk about how long does this last? Because I think this is the most interesting part about frozen shoulder.
Yeah. So when it comes to how long it lasts, it's super variable. So these phases you're going to find have ranges, and these ranges are very wide. So for example, the freezing phase, this was what we'd call like the inflammatory or acute phase. Things are getting worse at this point. It can be as short as 6 weeks or even as long as 9 months. So again, we're looking at like 3/4 of a year that you're dealing with this before you actually start to see any sort of changes. So it can be highly irritable for a very long period of time. Even 6 weeks is nothing to sneeze at. You know, if you think about most injuries, if you're seeing a provider for 6 weeks, you can patch up a lot of injuries within a 6 week time frame. And this is something that it can continue to progress for up to 9 months. The frozen phase. So again, this is more of the stiffness phase where the pain is a little bit less. The shoulder is just really lacking range of motion. This typically can last for an additional like 4 to 6 months. Okay. So again, 6 weeks to 9 months for the freezing phase. And then potentially right after that, 4 to 6 months in this frozen phase. And then lastly, we have the thawing phase, which could be a total of 6 months thawing for up to 2 years. And I actually just spoke with a patient the other day. Again, I wasn't treating her for this because it's not something I see clinically often, but she was telling me that she had it in both of her shoulders, and it took her about 3 years to completely be fully back to normal. So again, you're kind of in it for the long haul with this diagnosis. It's not something that goes away easily. It's not something to be taken lightly. And it is really important to have the proper management for it. And if it's not diagnosed correctly, it can really get in the way of hindering some of the treatments that could be effective, especially in the early phases. So Craig, why don't you tell us a little bit how it's diagnosed? I know you talked a little bit about multi-plane range of motion, active and passive. Can you break that down for our listeners? Let them know what that is. And is there any other things that might be helpful in determining whether or not we're dealing with an actual frozen shoulder, or how do we know it's not like the rotator cuff, for example?
So in the conservative world, you know, we're not big. And I mean, if you've listened to us for you know, more than one episode, you know, we're not the biggest fans of using imaging alone to diagnose things. So as physical therapists, we still go through our full shoulder exam. And like I mentioned before, one of the biggest things that we look for is a restriction in range of motion in multiple planes, actively, you as the patient producing the movement, and passively, us as the physical therapist taking you through this range of motion. We're also going to look at your muscle strength. Like we said, in some cases, you know, muscle testing might be irritable, but not necessarily weak, which might help us differentiate from something else. Like, let's say like, a, you know, like a rotator cuff tear. And we also do like a pretty thorough hands-on assessment. There are many moving parts to the shoulder, and there's many moving parts that can be painful that make the shoulder not move great in multi-planes as well. So making sure like, is this like an AC joint problem? Is this something that's coming from the neck? The whole point, you know, is something going on with your shoulder blade, you know, like, that's the, like you said before, having this diagnosed correctly is pivotal, because if it is truly frozen shoulder, then you need to get that education, like that this could possibly take years. So you want to make sure that you have someone taking an in-depth look to make sure that you're getting the right diagnosis, which in this case is critical. Our physician colleagues, sometimes they will use, there's a type of injection that they can do that can lead them down the route of frozen shoulder. I won't talk about that too much because, you know, we don't do injections. So it's not something that I have a lot of clinical experience with, but it's typically like a lidocaine or like a benign injection that they'll use to create a little more space in the joint. And you'll probably, if you know, if you are having shoulder pain, you're likely to get imaging of some kind. And in this case, they're not really going to see anything. There might be some, they might take some special look at like the capsule itself, but I don't think it's going to provide any like, you know, there's no gold standard. Like it's not an imaging gold standard to diagnose this condition. But like we talked about, like, we want to make sure that we're getting all the red flags out of the way and we're not missing something big. So I don't necessarily hate imaging for this condition to make sure that, you know, we're not missing any of the big stuff, but when it's warranted, like you shouldn't walk into your doctor's office, say you have shoulder pain, and then just randomly get an MRI. That doesn't make any sense. But ruling out red flags is something we should always be aware of. Anything you do additionally, Drew, that you're just making sure you know, you're hitting the nail on the head here with this frozen shoulder diagnosis?
You know, I think it's really interesting because obviously this is probably on the lesser common side of shoulder pathology that we see. I think we probably see a lot of rotator cuff issues. We see a lot of labral issues. We see more AC joint issues. We see more of that stuff. And sometimes this can almost look, because with those other types of conditions, you will also see a limitation in range of motion. And depending on how bad the pain is, you might see it in a number of different directions. So I think this is always something that, like, as a clinician, we have to have in the back of our heads as like, oh, this could be a frozen shoulder, or it could be a rotator cuff problem that is freezing as well. So it's, whereas when you see a patient, sometimes you might be able to say, oh, this is a rotator cuff problem and it's not a labral problem. Or you might be able to say it's a labral problem, not a rotator cuff problem, or vice versa, whatever direction you decide to go. But when it comes to a frozen shoulder, it could be a rotator cuff problem and it's progressing to a frozen shoulder. So as a clinician, I think from a diagnostic standpoint, we have to be able to recognize it. And I'm going to let you talk a little bit about why staging is so important, because if you stage this incorrectly, not only can it be detrimental to quicker recovery, but boy, it can really stretch things out for a very long period of time. And the level of, I guess, the damage it does to your quality of life for up to that 3-year mark can be pretty substantial. You know, it's one thing to have, you know, a rotator cuff issue impact you for 6 to 8 weeks, or even to have a rotator cuff surgery, for example, and be healed up maybe in a year and a half, but it's a completely different ballgame when something can last twice as long as a surgical recovery and you really don't have any other options for it. So Craig, tell us a little bit about staging and how often a patient should receive treatment and if staging even matters to that.
Yeah, I think staging is a pretty important part and I'll tell you why. So if we catch it in the acute phase, like that stage one, the freezing stage, like I talked about earlier, if we want to qualify this as like the inflammatory stage, I think we can do that. So, you know, getting frequent treatment at this stage, I think is nice because it can help with pain modulation, which is like kind of like the hallmark of this phase. And then, kind of introduce you to get into moving the shoulder again. Personally, when I see what I would classify as a stage one or freezing frozen shoulder, I like to see that person at least, you know, once or twice a week for a couple of weeks, first and foremost, to make sure I'm sure that I know what's going on, you know, because typically if we're talking about the insurance model of care, which I'm a little more familiar with this kind of stuff, typically you see your primary care doctor, and then sometimes you go see your orthopedic doctor and they say, well, go, we'll refer you to a physical therapist, see us in like 6 or 8 weeks, you know? So we want to make sure that we're pretty sure, because the length of time that you're seeing your providers can sometimes be kind of extended. Also, if there is a way we can find to modulate pain, whether that be with a various modality, or if the patient has like a good response to manual therapy, a little more frequent treatment, I think, is warranted. Once we move on to our, you know, we're sure with what we're dealing with, and then we move on to our, you know, next two phases, the frozen and the thawing phase, like Drew, you talked about earlier, low irritability there. And at that point, you shouldn't be seeking treatment very often. Hopefully by then, you're on a good exercise program and you kind of know where your limits are and you've been taught like, okay, this is what I need to be doing for the long haul. Maybe you check in once a month just to make sure, okay, am I doing my exercises right? Is my range of motion progressing? Do I have any questions? Are we still sure that this is what this is? Yes. Okay. Keep going. You know, see me in another month kind of deal.
Yep.
Because at that phase, like, you know, if we're in the frozen and thawing phase, it's not like there's a magic bullet out there that's going to suddenly, you know, increase your range of motion out of nowhere. You know, it's going to be essentially slow and steady wins the race. And I think like just having some good education and just making sure everything is going according to plan is, you know, best practice when we're talking about those last two low irritability phases. So I talked a little bit about treatment, but is that kind of what you do, Drew? Or like, what would you say if you had to rate treatment for this condition as like things you recommend, or things we're not sure about, or things that you wouldn't do? Like, what's your treatment strategy for frozen shoulder?
So I would say, number one, we need to figure out staging. So let's say that staging is in the acute phase or the freezing phase. We have a lot of really good research out there that actually says that a steroid injection done by an orthopedic surgeon or primary, whoever would do a steroid injection, it's best in the acute phase. We also have
an injection. We normally don't.
I normally hate
on the injection. So
I know, but it's one of those things where, you know what, like when it's helpful, we got to give it its props, you know?
I agree with you. I just felt the need to interject because, you know, we're always calling this kind of stuff out, but it's important when there's good research, you have to support it.
You got to support it. I can't be biased. Like I gotta tell the truth. I speak the truth, Craig.
that's what the people want.
That's what it's all about. It's all about the people. It's all about speaking. So steroid injection in the freezing phase. So if we stage it correctly, that steroid injection can reduce inflammation pretty quickly. And it might move you into the frozen phase a little bit sooner. So, and not only that, help modulate pain and improve the overall outcome, maybe a little bit quicker. We also know that if this is given in the other phases, like the thawing phase or the frozen phase, we really don't see much difference. So again, if we're, you know, catching wind that this is something that's freezing or it's a rotator cuff problem progressing to that, then we need to get you to somebody who can do a steroid injection. Other recommended treatments, I'd say mobility exercises are at the top of the list because it's something that the patient can take home, be independent with. I think the toughest part is the patient has to do this stuff every day. If the patient is not like slacking on it, you're going to see that shoulder stiffen back up in a lot of cases. Now, again, physical therapy, which is really interesting, isn't going to take you to 100% recovery. A lot of times doing nothing for this, I don't recommend that. And I'll tell you why. Doing nothing will actually result in a complete resolution of symptoms. I don't think that physical therapy will actually shorten the duration that you're going to have symptoms, but it's going to improve your function while you're struggling with this. So let's take this example. We'll say patient A goes to physical therapy. Patient A can't reach over their head. You know, they can maybe reach their arm right out in front of them. Patient B decides not to go to physical therapy. They both start in the freezing phase. Okay. Patient B can reach right out in front of them. also cannot go overhead. Patient A may be able to reach overhead all throughout the frozen phase to grab, you know, a drink or a glass off the shelf in their kitchen, or be able to tuck their shirt in when they go to work or wash their hair, those sorts of things. Whereas patient B, even though they might, it might take them both 2 years to fully heal and get better, patient B goes longer with more of that dysfunction, their inability to move their arm and use their arm for things that are useful. So I don't advocate for doing nothing. But what we do know is that this is the type of condition that does self-resolve on its own without intervention. But that's why we as physical therapists need to do a really good job of understanding that and knowing that we're not necessarily the game changers in getting rid of this, but more so we're facilitating to improve quality of life while you're struggling through it. So it is a little bit different take than other types of issues. Other recommended treatments, your physical therapist should be doing some manual therapy or joint mobilization. We'll typically get into the capsule and try to get it moving, get things to loosen up in there to reduce some of the stiffness and get some more range of motion within that shoulder. We have to be careful with how aggressive we are with this stuff. In the frozen phase, you can be more aggressive than in the freezing phase. And you can also be more aggressive in the thawing phase as well. So you kind of have to be careful, because if you are too aggressive too soon, you run the risk of flaring things up, especially with an irritable shoulder. And then other things too that are really important to consider is thoracic mobility, modifying your activity. You know, if you're in a freezing phase, there's different sleeping positions that we can advocate for patients and try to get them to sleep throughout the night, different types of positioning for the shoulder. We can also educate them on the difference between the freezing stage, the frozen stage, and the thawing stage. Just by the patient knowing exactly where they're at in the process, they can kind of tweak some of their activities of daily living. Craig, anything else you do for these folks? What about dry needling? What about like massage, cupping, you know, some of these other things? I mean, I'll refer out for the steroid injections, but I primarily am doing exercises and hands-on techniques with these folks.
Yeah, I would say exercise is my number one as well. The dry needling, I think I would put that in our potentially beneficial category, kind of like a more to come sort of thing. Dry needling, like research-wise for physical therapists, the more like Western style of using the acupuncture needle, I believe is still in like the infancy of kind of its, you know, research life. So maybe, you know, we do this podcast again in like 5 or 10 years, it turns into one of our recommended treatments. But right now I would say, you know, not enough to really say for, not enough to really say against either. I think that it is a pretty low risk treatment, all things considered. So if it's something you would be interested in trying, I typically will tell patients like, yeah, we could give it a go. Do I think it's like one of those things that you need to be dry needled 1 week for the next 12 weeks? Like, absolutely not. Like, you should try it a couple of times and it's beneficial, great. If it's not, it's not. You ditch it and you move on. Speaking of just moving on, things that we really wouldn't recommend for this is like a lot of the passive stuff is like, it can help in the freezing stage. I will say that. I will say that it can help with pain modulation, and that's about it. Like, is it getting you better? No. But is it making you feel better for the time being? Yes. And I think that that inherently has its own benefit. But like, will massage, electrical stimulation, cupping, will that, like, you know, quote, fix the frozen shoulder? I do not believe that it will. But if you are in that really early, highly irritable stage, then, you know, I think it's worth it from like a pain modulation sense. If you go in with that attitude, like, I just want to maybe try to improve my pain, I think that's okay, as long as you don't become reliant on it. Like, it should never be like, I need my arm massaged so I can make it through the day. I am not okay with that, you know? So it's kind of like that fine line that we walk with this modality stuff. I think everybody is very different when it comes to that. And I think you need to find yourself a good practitioner that can kind of talk you through that, like, okay, are we using this too much, or is this appropriate, or is not? I do think everyone is a little different there. The big one that I see a lot is the manipulation under anesthesia. So if any of our listeners have any friends with knee replacements, this is way more common that I see in like the knee after knee replacement. Like, your knee gets really stiff, doesn't want to bend, so you go in, they knock you out, and then somebody cranks on your knee to help get the range of motion back. I've seen great success with that. But in the shoulder realm, a little less successful, I think a little less supported by the research. Have I seen a patient that had a frozen shoulder get the manipulation under anesthesia? I have. My sample size is one though. And I can't say that it was like a massive game changer. So I always kind of caution people when it comes to that. And it kind of, I want to circle back to the doing nothing thing that you mentioned before, Andrew. And it's like such an interesting thing, right? It's like so hard for us to say like, you don't need us, you know? And I think that you are correct in saying that, like, can this condition self-resolve with when given enough time? Yes.
Don't say it again. Oh, stop saying
it. It hurts to say it. It's tough. It's tough to say it. I agree with you. But I think that that works good for some people and not all people. Some people, when they're in pain, they just don't want to move and they don't know if it's okay to move. And some people, when their shoulder gets really stiff, they might not be sure why it gets stiff, or they might think that they need surgery, or they might think that they need, you know, all these, you know, these other things. And I think coming to see someone that is trained highly in the musculoskeletal system, we can sit you down and talk you through everything that's going on and give you like these timetables. Cause I think people do way better when they're given information. The patients that I've seen in the freezing and frozen stage, they always come in and they leave feeling like they've learned a lot more and they just feel better about it. Cause it's kind of like when somebody knows what they're talking about and they can give you this timeline for stuff, I think that can be like incredibly reassuring. Doing your own mobility exercises when you have a frozen shoulder, I think is very important. And you know, even though the exercises can seem, you know, pretty basic on the surface, like I do think that you should be taught them by a trained professional and like how often to do them, how intense you should be stretching, how many reps, how many sets, you know, like, you know, kind of being educated on when is too much and when is not enough. I think that little, the minutia there, which can be accomplished in just a handful of visits, maybe even one or two, is, you know, worth its weight in gold. So that's kind of where I sit on the doing nothing fence, if you will. Anything else you'd like, don't recommend or things that you've heard and you would kind of tell patients like, okay, you know, maybe I wouldn't do this, you know, anything like that?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me kind of comes from, you know, you mentioned it before with the manipulation under anesthesia. You know, they're kind of taking your shoulder and they're moving into ranges it's not ready to move in yet. Sometimes I've actually seen, I've seen a handful of these. So I know you said your sample size is one. I've probably seen about three of these. The patient usually comes back and there, it almost kicks up the inflammatory phase again for a period of time. To where like I almost can't do anything. And usually what they'll do is they'll say, we want aggressive stretching. So they'll say like, you know, if you have a manipulation under anesthesia, they'll say, we want 5 days a week of physical therapy, like aggressive physical therapy. And I just don't find that it's made that big of a difference, at least in the cases that I've seen. Again, we're talking sample sizes here of one on your end and three on my end. I just haven't seen a lot of success with it. And that's unfortunate because I do think it's one of the recommended things. It's one, if you go see someone that isn't a physical therapist and they diagnose you with a frozen shoulder, they're talking about it. They'll hit you with a cortisone injection which hopefully they're in the freezing stage when it's done. And then that's kind of the next topic of conversation. I've also seen people recommend surgery for this, and people doing different types of like capsular releases and things like that. I'm not a fan of it. Again, you have an inflamed shoulder. It's going through an inflammatory process. And then you're going to go in and you're going to create more inflammation just for the sake of it. I just don't see the point. I haven't seen good success in the cases that I've seen done and the patients that I've seen that have had it done that I've spoken with, not necessarily treated, have said that it didn't change anything. They woke up, they still had the same limitations. And there wasn't too much difference. So I would say from the not recommended side of things, that's probably just, you know, kind of adding fuel to that fire of, you know, maybe that's something that we shouldn't worry so much about with this type of thing, especially if, you know, again, I hate saying this, doing nothing will result in the same exact outcome. Why have a surgery if the outcome is gonna be there at the end of the line anyway? And I think the only other thing I want to touch on, Craig, is movement quality. When these people reach their shoulder over their head, we see some different types of movement patterns, like almost like a shrugging of your scapula. And we just see a lot of different like wonky movement patterns with this. And I think it's one thing to go on YouTube and find some videos. It's another thing to go to, you know, a local trainer or something and be like, hey, can you show me some stuff I can do with my shoulder? But the mobility exercises need to be coached with movement quality in mind, because you're trying to reinforce good movement patterns. At the end of the day, there are good ways to move and there are not so good ways to move. I'm not going to say there are bad ways to move, because movement is movement, but there is always an optimal way to move. And then there is always a way that is suboptimal. So it is really important to be coached in that way, by a physical therapist or by somebody who understands what normal movement is supposed to look like. You don't want to layer poor movement on dysfunction over and over and over again, because oftentimes it results in more dysfunction. So I don't know, just figured I'd throw that in there. Craig, do you want to kind of wrap this up? Do you have any like big key take home points for us? I know that we threw a lot of stuff at you guys today, but I think this stuff was all super valuable, and it's not always information that we like to share, because of course we want to help people, you know, with our craft, but not everything requires our craft, and it's important that the world knows it.
Yeah, well said. I would say my key takeaway from this one is, first and foremost, just make sure that it's correctly diagnosed. So make sure people are pretty confident about what's going on. And if it is frozen shoulder, just kind of be aware of what stage you're in. And then once you've got that all figured out, then just realize that you're going to be in it for the long haul. Just stay consistent, know that you will get better. And sometimes it might help to have somebody like a physical therapist kind of guide you through that process every so often. And just make sure you don't get rushed into a quick fix or surgery or some of the not needed treatments that we talked about, because we know this is something that could go on for years. It's, as a patient, like super hard to, in some cases can be super hard to like realize that, but don't let that push you in a way that, you know, makes you do something that really isn't even recommended for it.
Awesome. Thank you for tuning into the Straight Talk Physio podcast. If you like what you're hearing, it would mean the world to us if you subscribe to this podcast and the Peak Physiotherapy and Performance YouTube channel. For more information about us, please check us out on Facebook at Peak Physiotherapy and Performance and on Instagram at P3 Physiotherapy. For more information about Craig, you can follow him at DrCraigG_PT on Twitter and Instagram. If you have any topic suggestions, comments, or questions, then feel free to email us at thestraighttalkphysiopodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again for watching, and we hope you have an awesome day.